Okay, welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, beaming in from the International Space Station. Well, not exactly, more like my basement, but we've managed to hack through the tech, and we've gone remote, just as the vast majority of people have. So.
Your basement is an equally alien environment.
Yes, it has better acoustics, I think, than most places, but you know how it goes. Got to roll with the times, right? So.
Oh, I've been rolling for 3 weeks now.
The COVID times, yes, absolutely. So
the COVID times, we should start a newspaper called the COVID times.
A virtual newspaper? Or?
Well, it would have to be. Who's going to deliver it?
A little mimeograph. I saw the tribs have made the rounds. There is a paper trip making the rounds in the neighborhood. So.
Yes, I have gotten my paper trip too.
Oh, so. You still get one, yeah?
Yeah. Well, somebody down the way from me delivers it, so.
Right. You got a connection.
Let's do the intro. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. to talk about the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world. And we sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians. This week, though, we're sticking to the COVID news, and we're going to do our usual kind of round robin of what's been going on locally, provincially, nationally, and internationally, and we'll have a musical interlude in between. This week, as people will note, it's a bit different. We are doing this all remotely, so I'm in the driver's seat again. But
damn, as it should be.
Oh well, thank you. But so yeah, why don't we start with the local scene and recap everything that has happened in Guelph locally in the last week. Where should we start? I guess we're now living under a state of emergency.
Yes, that was announced.
Almost.
Give the details that you've been following that obviously a bit closer than I have. I mean, I know that from following Cam on Twitter, but what is... I think some people might not be clear on what it means.
Right.
And I know you've done the deep dive into that, so
mm-hmm.
Tell the people of Guelph what it means, Adam, including me.
Tell the people. Yeah, it was almost a week ago. It was like 10 o'clock last Thursday that he went online and posted that announcement to Twitter, and the news was sent out, and I was literally putting the newsletter to sleep, as we say.
Breaking news at 10 p.m.
Yeah, as it was like literally breaking. And yeah, I talked to Cam on Friday about it, and you can see that Q&A on Politico. And basically, it is not martial law, as some people online have.
Or marital law.
Or marital law.
Marital law was my favorite. It's marital law. It's not. No one's getting married these days. Maybe virtually, but not. Yeah.
Well, there was
no marital law for Guelph.
There was that couple in Toronto that got married on Zoom. They had their family all attend via Zoom. They got married in their apartment. So there is marital law in effect. But
if I could do it all over again, I would invest in Zoom.
Well, I mean, we may get to that later, but you know that presents its own challenges. But martial law or not martial law, Mayor Guthrie said it was more of a psychological move to get sort of people galvanized. And what you know, to give it a bit of background too, this was the same day it was announced that several healthcare workers in the Guelph General had contracted COVID-19. It was after the region of Waterloo had declared a state of emergency. It was after Stratford and Perth County had declared a state of emergency. So kind of everybody in our area was, heading that way, I guess. But Cam said, yeah, it's kind of more psychological that he wants to make sure everybody is thinking first about the social distancing stuff and... staying away from each other and, no touching, no physical contact, staying out of the park, staying off the playground equipment, staying out of the rec facilities, all that.
And I saw his tweet about the buses, how he's on the bus, and it looks like some of the seats are marked off, but he had said that people are joyriding on the buses. That's almost kind of creepy. The COVID bus, which I was on a couple of times a couple of weeks ago, was pretty creepy before they taped seats off or anything. It's everybody's quiet. Nobody wants to talk. But if you're somebody in town who's just going on the bus for the hell of it these days, I would strongly suggest that you not do that.
Yeah, there were some quarters on social media who were saying, if you're joyriding on the bus, don't do that. I think Cam picked up that baton. And it's especially if you don't know the rules for Guelph Transit right now, it is only 10 people at a time. So they're encouraging, like, only if you need to get somewhere, like, if you're taking the bus to do grocery shopping, if you're going to a medical appointment, if you're going to work because you are work at a quote-unquote essential service. At rush hour, not to say that, any joyriders are getting on at rush hour, but, at a particularly busy time when there's a limit of 10 people on the bus, you could be taking a spot from somebody who desperately needs to get to where they are going. And that's to say nothing of the fact that we are being encouraged to not go out unnecessarily. And I can't think of anything more unnecessary than doing the COVID tour on Guelph Transit.
Yeah, it'd be a big mistake for sure. I'm not sure what the penalties are for that. There are some other, I guess we'll get to that under provincial, the other penalties that are being enforced for people who are not following the rules, so to speak. But yeah, you would hope that something like declaring a state of emergency would do a solid in people's minds that we're not really messing around. I mean, I guess the only level of government that hasn't declared one yet is the feds. And it may come to that. They all three levels keep alluding to, we're going to all the tools in the toolbox and we're going to possibly implement more things. But of course, the number one tool in the toolbox, as they say, is physical distancing. And you're not really fulfilling that if you're on the bus just to goof around. Because it sounds like Toronto, at least, it's going to be a 12-week shutdown? They're trying to implement like an even longer physical distancing and people in isolation?
Yeah, I wrote that down somewhere. John Tory...
May 1st, April 30, right?
Yeah, he says they're working on a 12-week plan because the numbers in Toronto are going in the wrong direction. And actually, the numbers across the country are still going up. We crossed 10,000 in Canada today. Just last hour, it was, we're recording this at around, noon hour. For this morning, the numbers were at 10,132, and in Ontario, that's 2,793. So almost 3,000. I mean, it's probably not unrealistic to think we're going to get to 3,000, sometime on the weekend, if not before.
Yeah, and of course, these are confirmed cases. I think Dr. Tammet said that obviously not all those with the virus will have been tested, and we're seeing that in town as well. The things that are being reported, like you had mentioned, the general or there's three confirmed cases at the Homewood and the Addiction Medicine Services Department. So we're seeing these little cells, I guess, of outbreak that they can trace. But that does, there's obviously other people in town that have been sick. And I guess the assumption is people should assume, and this is not just coming from me, but the general acceptance is that you just assume everything's contaminated and that everybody that you meet is potentially somebody who has COVID-19, unless of course they're within your enclosed sphere of isolation and that you're not breaking that isolation.
Right. And it's important.
Because there's a couple of reported supermarket cases as well, right? I don't really want to name names, but one of them confirmed was Longo's in the South End, right?
There
was some uncertainty about the one at the No Frills on Harvard, but it sounds like they're doing a deep clean.
Either way, they were being proactive at the Harvard No Frills. The store was closed on Monday for that deep cleaning. Nobody's taking any chances. And if the grocery stores are now vulnerable, you should feel especially encouraged to not not go out unless it's absolutely necessary. And I mean, I think everyone is recommending if you have to go out and do grocery shopping, do it once a week. Don't do this piecemeal thing where, you know, you go out to grab a couple of things because you need something to do.
Or socializing too. There was that report from Toronto that people are going to the supermarket and kind of hanging out.
Yeah.
And they've hired security guards to say, no. Like, get your stuff and get out. This isn't fun time, right? It really isn't fun time.
No.
And there are services out there that get groceries to you, but also you can, lots of places you can order ahead and they'll just pick it all. You want to statistically reduce as much contact as possible, even as people you know at the supermarket. It's like, just, you have to keep your physical distance. You absolutely have to. It's, everyone keeps saying it's the number one thing. So it's like, you can't just go to the supermarket and hang out. Sadly, it's unfortunate.
Well, you can't really go anywhere and hang out.
No, I mean, there's been some suggestion that if you want to go for a meet somebody for a walk, you 100% keep your 2 meters.
Yeah.
More would probably be better. There's no reason as to why you can't do that, but you have to keep the space between you, or, you know, the transfer is just going to keep on going and going, and we cannot have that. I should also mention too about U of G had an announcement yesterday, University of Guelph, that face-to-face classes are canceled until August 15th. So there's going to be
no summer semester.
No students on campus this summer, I believe. There are some people that are doing research, perhaps COVID research. I don't know, but there are, you know, there's certain research that can't just shut down because of everything that's happened. It needs to keep going. But everything will be in an alternative format for the summer. So that's effectively shutting. I shouldn't say that. Not shutting the campus down, but in shutting classes down. Conventional classes done, and everything is alternative format. So that's fairly huge.
Well, and they've also canceled convocation or postponed it. I mean, it wasn't exactly clear what's going to happen with that. At least in Dr. Vaccarino's post. But yeah, no convocation either, and I mean that's in June. So I mean,
I would suspect that they're going to bump it because convocation is so important to graduates. I think, and it's unfortunate too. The tough part is there are people that are going to graduate and they're going to go. Well, actually, these days they can't really go anywhere, but we also can't congregate. So as to when that will happen, I mean, it could potentially be well into the future. But I think, I think they're probably going to aim to have something. I mean, obviously not on Zoom, which would really suck. That's sort of a meme joke that's making the rounds. It's like Zoom graduation was fantastic. It's like, no, probably isn't. If you're into that, it's not. So that remains. There's so much that's up in the air though. So that's, I think they will try and do something to make that happen eventually, even if it's delayed, but there's really not much you can do. So, and speaking of delayed too, the city's looking to, I saw this morning, the city's looking to maybe help people defer their property taxes for a bit. Did you follow any of that?
I don't know if there's anything new on that. At the emergency meeting a couple of weeks ago, they approved waiving of like fees and penalties. So if you don't pay your property taxes on April 30th, if you can't pay your property taxes on April 30th, you will not collect penalties or interest or anything like that. You'll still be able to pay the full amount whenever you can. That's how it stands right now. I think the mayor and others in city staff have talked about, you know, looking at quote unquote all options, about, you know, what's going to happen with, property taxes and things, if that's going to be deferred or delayed. I think it's, you know, we'll probably get into that as we get deeper into April. I mean, I think the test right now is of course the rent. You know, April 1st was yesterday, so that's when a lot of people, pay their rent.
That's a massive battle going on social media right now, too. You've probably seen some of that.
Oh, yes. And, you know, some of it has been very heartwarming that, you know, you've had a lot of landlords say, you know what, it's unprecedented times, yada, yada, yada. You know, obviously, I will help you. If not paying the rent means the difference between you having like groceries and not having groceries, then by all means, hold, you know, don't pay me the rent for now. But on the other hand, you do have to be frank about it, dickish landlords who...
Yeah, I was going to say unscrupulous, but yeah, if you want to say dickish, that's probably fairly accurate.
And, you know, the ones who are, you know, either still collecting the rent and sort of having no compunction about it at all, or even a couple of cases of people raising rent. And I guess maybe that to compensate, you know, in their own minds. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but, you know, I'm sure that there are some landlords. I mean, and this is like, there's a diaspora of sort of the situation too, because you have like the landlords who maybe bought a couple of properties as an investment and, you know, they need to keep up those payments because, you know, they're small, basically small businesses, small property managers. And then you have the people who, I remember reading this one case on social media, so take it with a grain of salt, but you know, this one guy who owns like 20 properties that he puts on Airbnb, and he's managing 20 yes. properties on Airbnb. Of course, nobody's Airbnb-ing it now, so he is SOL. And you know,
yeah, is this the guy that effectively disappeared? They're all looking like, who? Where is this guy?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, so
assuming
I mean,
it's a guy, but I would, you know, and that's I would add to that too. I mean, if your life financial plan depends solely on the rent coming in from people, then your financial planning is, in my opinion, terrible. So, like yeah. if that's the only income you're going to have, now mind you, I guess there are people that run businesses as well, but
mm-hmm.
There has to be. And it was Chrystia Freeland even chimed in on that. She said it would, quote, be a heartless act to evict someone right in the middle of this, but I would say that there are people that would do it because that's just how that works.
Well, so there's this weird purgatory, right? Because Doug Ford and the Ontario government has come out and said, you know, we're not enforcing evictions right now. We're not hearing it. You know, people can stay put where they are. This is, you know, dangerous and unprecedented circumstances. But there was reporting yesterday that people are still, landlords are still allowed to file the paperwork. They're still allowed to, you know, put in the notices. So this department of civic affairs is, you know, might get flooded with these requests. And by, you know, by the time things get back to normal, they're dealing with a desk full of requests from landlords who are trying to evict people in the midst of this crisis because they didn't yep. have the money to pay. And that's going to be a whole other sort of bureaucratic nightmare by the time we get to the end of this.
Well, I would say if there's listeners looking for advice, you might want to check out GuelphRentersUnion.com.
Mm-hmm.
I had a bit of a read of that this morning, and it looks like there's some advice. I'm not directly advocating that you take all that advice because we're not really allowed to do that. But if you're looking for some insight and intel on what's going on, they may be able to help, among others. But
mm-hmm.
that sprung up virtually overnight, I think, and there's several of those in cities, not only across the province, but across the country, I would imagine. And I would probably extend that to the world. There has to be a group like that in every town.
No.
Trying to give out advice on what the heck you should do or try to do or
yeah.
what you can do. So,
yeah, I guess that, you know, kind of goes through all the local stuff. You know, we're kind of already in the provincial swing of things. I will add on the rent front, too, that the Canadian Federation of Independent Businesses is also calling for national action on both on the behalf of tenants and on the behalf of landlords.
So, that's amazing. Yeah. Well, I think people know my opinion on the CFIB, but anyway, that's yeah, it's strange days when you've got people that would normally advocate the opposite to do that. So
it's opposite day.
It's the five people that work at the CFIB are anyway to provincial.
Yeah. What are you looking at the provincial? I feel like I've been talking a lot, so you take a turn.
Oh, okay, thanks. Yeah, people need to realize where this is a strictly audio connection, so we don't have our normal cues that we give each other. So it's just a couple of guys having a chat on the new telephonic devices. I guess provincially, and there's a bit of overlap between all the provinces with this story too, is the amount of confirmed COVID-19 cases in seniors' homes.
Yes.
It was said that in Quebec, a quarter of the seniors' homes in the entire province have at least one case. And as of yesterday, which was Wednesday the 1st, that's 519 different institutions or different places that have varying levels of outbreak. I guess there's no other way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing this too. The story that's getting a lot of focus in Ontario in particular is the situation in Bob Cage, and I can't remember the name of the...
Pinecrest,
where 24 staff have tested positive, and 15 residents, last I had heard, had died there, which is a phenomenal number considering, you know, the size of a place of Bob Cajun. I don't think the seniors home is particularly large.
No.
And supposedly it's 41 seniors homes in Ontario right now, similar to Quebec, have cases or outbreaks large and small. And this is kind of a reflection on how we've talked about this in the past too. There are certain places, so certain institutions, obviously anything to do on the medical front, but the ones that we kind of forget about, or we're not forgetting about now, but places that lend themselves to an outbreak like this, like seniors' residences or prisons, or I guess in the bigger scheme of things, we'll get to that too, are things like cruise ships, where there is absolutely nowhere to go. And once, you know, it just takes one person and one case and it will spread like wildfire if they aren't taking certain measures, which seems to be the case.
So, I mean, along with the nursing home thing is this discrepancy in the numbers, right?
Yes.
So it was asked of the chief medical officer of the province yesterday. The province found 37, added 37 deaths to the total, and some enterprising reporter calculated the number from all the public health units, and it turned out 68, so almost double the provincial numbers. And this may not necessarily be something nefarious, like someone like, we got to keep the numbers down, like someone else we can name, but it just shows that the struggle of sort of staying on top of the situation data-wise, that maybe there's a lag between when public health are uploading their numbers and when the province is making those adjustments. And I've seen this a lot from the beginning of the crisis, because, you know, the number you get on Ontario, the Ontario website, is not always necessarily the same as the one you get on the national web page. Yeah.
And they'll need to coordinate a bit better if that is the case. I mean, if it's simple enough for somebody to go in and just get the health department numbers, and then it turns out that the provincial number is roughly half of that, then something is wrong in terms of the collating the data. And
right.
They really need to work on that.
And I'm not sure how it's working on the back end, but, you know, the public numbers, like here in Wellington, Dufferin, and Guelph, for example, they're posting the new numbers every day, I think at 5:30, but the province updates theirs at 10:30 every day, like 10:30 in the morning versus 5:30 in the evening. So, you know, what kind of turnaround is there?
It's a bit of a lag, I guess.
It's a bit of a lag too. And on top of it all too, like Wellington, Dufferin, Guelph, and this is not to insult them at all, but, you know, they just finally started doing a regular update of the numbers, in terms of posting the data on their website and in sort of easy to understand chart forms and infographs, which is something that, you know, Waterloo Region has been doing from the start, and, you know, Government of Ontario has been doing from the start. It just, you know, this crisis kind of runs on data, and it shows a certain, like, maybe how vulnerable we are to not understanding the full picture.
Yeah, and it probably took them a bit of time to get that up and running. Because,
oh, yeah.
You know, it's obviously not turnkey, although it has been a couple of weeks. But at least, you know, it's in motion now. So at least I did have a look at that, because there's a dynamic one and there's a static one, right? I ended up on the dynamic one. And I didn't really understand what was going on. I'm more of like, give me a page with the hard numbers. And they're fairly morbid numbers, too. I mean, it's almost unfortunate we're getting to that point where it's like we're just counting the, you know, counting the stats. But, of course, these are things that we need to know for sure. Another statistic sort of related to that and kind of related to what's going on in care homes and seniors homes is that 1 in 10 of the cases in Ontario currently is a healthcare worker.
Yeah.
So this is all the people on the front lines, paramedics, police, fire, you name it. And it's, I guess the fear is, or the concern is right now, is that within the coming weeks, if not sooner than that, that the, you know, the amount of people that are getting taken out of service, I guess, with COVID is going up. So that's obviously a number to watch as well. That's like 10%.
Yeah.
Where was it? Was it, I guess there was a case with police. I'm not sure what area it was or what region it was. It was a couple of police had it, and there's like hundreds of them on, like, off the books right now. Is that right? Or?
In New York City, I think the number is 1,200 officers are on sick leave. That may not necessarily be COVID related, but, you know, they have 1,200 officers on sick leave, which is, you know, not an insignificant number even amongst the, you know, the NYPD.
So, and they haven't started calling the military yet, but I have a feeling, at least in Canada and probably other places, I guess we're moving up a bit from provincial, but there's lots of crossover, that it's probably only a matter of time before the military and related are going to get involved, if that's the case, whether it's medical teams or and I guess there's been some pressing into service of people that have retired or working less hours, I suppose, getting the call up to come in and work. And going back to local too, it seems that there's jobs available at the hospital, and all of a sudden, did you hear? Yeah, you heard that, I guess.
Yeah, the hospital's hiring 100 people. I think all the area hospitals are hiring. Cambridge Memorial's hiring. St. Mary's is hiring. And it's for a variety of positions too. Like, some of them are, you know, I'm not going to say low skill, but I mean, in terms of being able to quickly adapt people, they're looking for cleaners. And I imagine because of the more stringent conditions, that even the people who are presently custodial staff at the hospital are probably being retrained on just how thorough a cleaning they have to do, and maybe what adjustments they have to make to their routine to get that thorough cleaning.
Because they'll be maxed out, right?
And absolutely.
It'll be continuous. It'll be 24-hour cleaning at this point, I would imagine. So.
And I know in Sweden they are retraining like flight attendants to do hospital like caretaking. So
that sort of makes sense. I mean, I guess. Well, and good for them, because I guess the flight attendants are off mostly everywhere, with exceptions, obviously. But yeah, so that if you are looking for work, I would check out those websites, and you may be able to come up with something. But and hopefully all the protections and training is in place, I would imagine. So, and something else that's going on that I wanted to note as well is saw some talk of this morning. I think it was on CTV about the echo pandemic.
Mm.
So if there are, and meaning that there are people out there that you don't have COVID-19, you may know somebody with COVID-19, but the emotional toll, not only the people working directly on the front lines, but all of us who are not used to being socially isolated, socially distant, or physically distant, that it can amp up latent, or maybe if you already have it, depression and anxiety and things that you may suffer from. So I just wanted to point that out to people, that they should probably consider reaching out to someone. I know it's difficult because we're all isolated, but there are lots of excellent services out there that can help you through that, even if you just call telehealth or the addictions and mental health. What is that? CMHA.ca is probably worth checking out.
CMHA.
Don't sit. CMHA.
Canadian and Mental Health Association.
And there's CAMH as well, the right addiction and mental health. So
yeah.
Could you guys have fixed those initials a bit better? I think it's important that people don't sit on their mental wellness, even with everything that is going on. If you really need to talk about things, find someone to do that with, whether it's somebody you know, or if it is indeed higher up the scale. But don't hesitate to do that because of the times. You shouldn't just say, oh, well, all the doctors and everybody are busy with this, they're not worried about me. No, there are people out there that are concerned about you. So, and if you're looking for a list, actually, we mentioned a couple there, but if you check out, if you Googled Echo Pandemic CTV, I think you should probably be able, it's an extensive and very good list of resources that you can visit if that is what is going on with you right now. And telehealth, I give the number, I guess, 1-866-797-0000. They're obviously incredibly busy, but keep that number in mind. Mm-hmm. Or Google them, because Googling everything seems to be our default these days.
That seems like a good place to take a break on. So we will take a musical cue here, and then we'll be right back with more Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. Okay, we are back, and this is the half where we go macro, as they say. We're going to talk about the national scene and the international scene. The national scene seems to be, and I just kind of watched out of the corner of my eye the Trudeau daily update. Still from outside the house, he's still doing the social distancing, even though he... his wife is clear of COVID. I guess an abundance of caution is probably best than...
Well, I think his wife and the kids have taken off to, dare I say it, the cottage, which is what you're not supposed to do, but realistically that's where they are.
Right, that's...
Barrington Lake or whatever it's called? Is that right? Covington Lake? I can't even remember.
Yeah.
They got lots of real estate, so they should be okay.
Right, and don't go to the cottage. That should be a...
No, don't go to the cottage. Unless you're Sophie Trudeau and the kids, but that's whatever.
Well, I mean, he is the prime minister working through a national pandemic, so maybe that's okay. But, I mean, there is a serious thing where you have mayors in cottage country who are saying, like, you know, don't come home, or, like, don't come to the cottage, don't come to our area, you're putting stress on our resources.
Our hospital has 5 beds, and one of them is intensive care, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Not a good idea. Not cool. Not a good idea.
Our intensive care unit is the greenhouse, but I mean, that's...
Potentially, yeah, when you've got tents and parking lots holding people, like,
yeah.
I guess you don't want to see something like that up in a place like, I don't know, Bob Cajun or whatever,
well,
that, right?
That's it, that's it. I guess the controversy of the week is Patty Hajdu, the health minister, saying that... we should say controversy because she, you know, spoke the truth, and that's... kind of rare in politics at times, but she said that it turned out the country may not have been as well prepared as it should have, could have, in terms of stockpiling PPE, personal protective equipment, and yeah, that seems to be where we are at with the terms in terms of candor about the current crisis.
Yeah, and with everybody being stretched to the limit, I think the normal protections that you would have over things that you would say are probably being lifted because everybody's at that level is generally exhausted. But it sounds like that she isn't wrong when you've got like pleas coming out of Quebec saying, oh, we've only got a few more days left of supplies. It sounds like they used an entire year of supplies in a month.
Mm-hmm.
Trudeau in one of his daily talks was talking about made in Canada solutions, and we're seeing some of that locally with that small business that I think he name checked them, didn't he, in Waterloo, that are making the visors.
Yeah.
They're just pumping these things out. Something like visors is one thing. The masks, and of course the great mask debate is ongoing, but you would want healthcare workers, among others, to have proper N95 or greater masks and protection. And it sounds like they it's one of those things where they had a plan during when SARS happens, like, oh, we'll need to keep all this stuff on hand. And then, of course, they, you know, open the cupboard and there's all of this stuff. And there's probably, if we talk about this, I think the masks are probably fine, but the things that hold them on your face, the elastics are probably rotten as elastics do.
Yeah.
That's just a guess on my part. But if the masks are trashed. And didn't she also say something about how we've underfunded, like previous governments have underfunded this. I don't know if that was a shot just at the conservative government of Harper or more. I mean, well, we know in the States that Trump, although he denies it, sort of cut the pandemic planning money.
Right.
But the Canadian one might be a bit more of a, you know, you can see them wanting to keep supplies on hand, but if they're firing through them,
well,
then, there's not much you can do.
Trump cut the pandemic plan. He cut the pandemic planners. But I did read Patty Hajdu's statement as a broadside to not just, you know, the years under the Harper conservatives, but I mean to Chrétien. Chrétien and Martin still get, shall we say, crap about, you know, the 90s and the cuts to federal funding, the downloading, all in an effort to, you know, balance the federal books. And of course, the province downloaded a lot on municipalities too, which is why the social housing condition in Guelph and other places in Ontario is why it's at where it's at today. So
the neoliberal obsession is coming back to bite everybody.
Yeah.
So proof in the pudding, right? But anyway, yes.
Yeah.
Well, sorry.
Agreed.
A little bit of editorial there, but yeah.
No, I think we all agree. And I mean, you could be right, too. That could be the type of, you know, candor you're going to get from your government representatives when, you know, the PR flacks are at home and not necessarily, you know, training the ministers to respond with the best possible quips. And, you know, when they're tired, you know, this has been, you know, we're almost at the end of, or we're almost starting sort of week four. I mean, today and tomorrow, we're entering the fourth week of this. And
wow.
So it's almost a solid month.
And when you're high profile like
that, yeah.
It's inevitable. Like they're probably not, you know, probably not sleeping at all. Not unlike Foreign Affairs Minister Champagne, who they thought had COVID.
But was negative.
I think he's trying to coordinate the Canadians, getting the Canadians out there in lockdown locations. Peru might have 2,000 to 3,000 Canadians.
Yeah.
And it sounds like there's maybe 8,000 total people outstanding out there. I don't know if they're all trying to get home, but I would assume that the vast majority are. I think some of them are on cruise ships like that one in Florida, which I think we'll get to in a bit, but why are you on a cruise? But yeah, so he's obviously working on that probably continuously.
Yeah.
Because they're not all in one time zone to try and coordinate and see what they can get people out. So they're all.
And there's a Guelph family in Peru, too.
I don't think there's anybody at that level that isn't working flat out. And if they are, they'll probably get their butt kicked.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
And then there's a Guelph family in Peru, too. We should note that. And it's been a struggle to get them home. And yeah, I mean, the cruise ship situation, like I've never felt compelled to go on a cruise. I will never step foot on a cruise after all this, but still, I mean, they're the one ship in Florida you were talking about. There's 250 Canadians on board. Ron DeSantis, who's the governor of Florida, who only yesterday decided to put the state on lockdown.
But religious services are still exempt.
We'll get to that too, but the
considered essential. Yeah, we're bleeding in over into international, but you know,
the DeSantis thing. You know, he's saying like, yeah, we'll probably let the people from Florida off, but you know, there's something like 1,000, maybe not that high, but you know, there's several hundred Americans on the ship too, and then
I think it's 400.
Yeah,
250 Canadians and 400 Americans.
Yeah,
and it looks like, believe it or not, it's going to be Trump that's going to have to sort it out. Trump's like, no, we're just going to.
Yeah, Trump said at his presser last night that he's going to put them on a plane and send them home, which thanks, I guess, for doing the bare minimum of charity.
Yeah, see, if he was a Democrat governor, he'd beat on him and then do it. But now, in this case, it's just like, no, we're just going to quietly do that without beating on DeSantis, good Republican. Yeah, so we've slid into international. But in terms of Canada, too, I guess people are probably aware of the what are they calling it? The largest economic program in Canadian history, probably since World War II.
Mm-hmm.
What are the two? The Canadian Emergency Wage Subsidy and the Canadian Emergency Response Benefit seem to be the two that will affect Canadians, including Guelphites, directly.
Right, and they didn't announce sort of what the various hoops were going to be till yesterday, but yeah, it's like $71 billion for the wage subsidy. Basically, the way it works is, if you don't and this comes from Lloyd in the virtual town hall they did on Tuesday. The chamber hosted, the Chamber of Commerce, I should say, in case people are thinking of the Chamber of Secrets or something.
But, Chamber of Horrors, yeah.
But Lloyd Longfield, our MP, said basically the way it works is if you don't qualify for EI, if you don't qualify for, you know, if you don't work for someplace that, you know, that qualifies for the wage subsidy, then you will go into CERB. And if you know you're trying to figure all this out, he also said that you will roll into the program if you apply for the one program and it turns out you don't qualify, that you will automatically get rolled over into your application will get rolled over into the other program. Now that's not to say that you'll get a check tomorrow. Well, you won't get a check tomorrow because I don't think the applications are open until the 6th. But if you apply on the 6th and you know you don't. You know, you don't qualify right away, and chances are this the government website will crash on Monday when this opens for business anyway. But it at least implies that it's going to be fairly easy for you to get access to whatever program you fit into.
Yeah, and it's not the number that was floated in terms of getting the subsidy or the benefit was 3 to 6 weeks. So
yeah,
I hate to be that guy, but it's probably going to be 6 weeks. And the what you were saying about the website crashing, it seems like even right now they're getting something like 300,000 inquiries daily from across the country.
Yeah.
Now whether that's the same people going on and on over again or fresh numbers, but that's significant. It sounds like they have hired a ton of people to try and field all of this at Service Canada, which is what they pretty much have to, because there'd be no in-person visits now, so it's all going to be just coordinated remotely. So
yeah, they've shut down the Service Canada
because
yeah.
It's going to be quite the challenge.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, and Trudeau is also talking about further measures having to bring Parliament back because people may not be aware that the wage subsidy was increased. It was going to be 10%, and then he I guess the other members of the caucus decided to increase it to 75%. So that's going to have to require further parliamentary votes. That will happen probably sometime next week. So be on the lookout for that. Any thoughts about Evan Sullivan was doing his part this morning, talking about how we might need to. Going to bail out specifically for the oil and energy industry. So,
You want my opinion on that?
Yes.
I think the entire universe knows my opinion.
Fair.
Yeah, and in the middle of this too, what was this announcement about the Kenny government giving $1 billion to the industry? Like that is just, I get the impression that that was all kind of lined up before everything happened, and they just kind of went ahead with it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Most, I believe, in this country, non-corporate people, just regular Canadians, and probably a lot of them working in the oil patch, would argue that cash would be better served being given directly to people somehow, either in some kind of benefit or something that they can use, rather than subsidizing the oil and gas industry. I personally think it's ridiculous that that's even coming up. I mean, you want free markets? If oil is worth less than a classy pint at a restaurant, that's not anybody's fault. That's not anyone in Canada's fault, any of the workers' fault, or whoever, right? So this is if you budget for a world where oil is like, what was it at its peak? $130 a barrel,
right?
You've fashioned your budget for that, and it's actually only worth $3. It's like, well, sorry, you need to adapt. But throwing $1 billion at the oil and gas industry right now is, it's to become a shareholder in the Trans-Canada pipeline, right?
Yeah. Well, it's,
to me, that's just plain ridiculous. But
yeah, well,
I don't think I'm alone in that. I would think the majority of people probably agree with that, regardless of your view on. Climate change, among other things. But.
Well, it's tricky, too, because, you know, we're supposed to be focused on COVID, but what the things that's driving oil prices down have nothing to do with COVID. It's the price war between Russia and Saudi Arabia right now. And
yeah, that front opened up just before all of this, and then COVID just went bang and sort of added a different angle of attack to that. So it's got at least Canadian crude's in the toilet, right? Isn't it? It's the lowest.
Yeah, $4, I think.
Yeah.
Well, that's that.
It's $50 to be like it. It costs, I believe, the number used to be $50 for tar sands and sort of crappy Canadian oil to be worth scooping out of the ground. So you're just, if you're going to give corporate subsidies, then it's just corporate welfare and it's not right. So
yeah,
in my opinion,
which, you know, conservative governments are supposedly against, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, it is. If it's their friends, then they'll.
Well, this is it.
In my view. So, yeah, there's some coverage going on there, but yeah, anyway.
Anyway, going international, there is some breaking international news. They are postponing the Democratic National Convention until August.
Whoa.
So that will likely maybe force the Republicans to push back their convention, because typically the party presently in the White House gets to go second. So,
and they'll be like, no, we're going to have it. It's going to be beautiful. We're going to go down to Florida.
Are they having it in Florida?
They're going to hold it at Mar-a-Lago. Oh, jeez. Special line drawn around it so they can just hold it.
Maybe.
Pure speculation, folks. I don't know that for sure, but I wouldn't put it past
But we were talking about religious services. I just wanted to shout this out because it's so ridiculous, but a pastor in Louisiana who was defying the state's orders to have no gatherings larger than 10, he was hosting services in the hundreds at his megachurch. His name is Tony Spall. He was ordered by Louisiana to shut it down, and he was fined. And he's going to take it to court. You will never guess who his lawyer is.
No, I won't. Who is it?
None other than former Alabama Senate candidate and alleged pedophile Roy Moore.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah,
but he's found redemption, right? So it's fine. Everything's okay. He got blessed or said whatever you have to say in those circumstances. Yeah, I think I saw that guy's arrest. It was like or his summons being handed to him. And he said something about blah blah blah, the First Amendment, and
On the other hand.
When you're potentially, I was just going to say, when you're potentially killing people in the name of faith, which isn't a new thing, you're just being ridiculous. So by all means, celebrate your faith. But to say that everything's cool and you're just going to congregate, I mean, they should bring the hammer down. Not as hard as in the Philippines, where, what is it, Duarte is like, oh, if you break quarantine, we're just going to shoot you.
Yes.
So this guy is, and there's a lot of, obviously, people deeply into their faith in the Philippines as well, but you know, just don't do it.
Well, it's not just
Louisiana. If you can hear us, stay home, pray at home, feel free, but just don't do this.
Well, of course, too. It's not just in the Philippines. It's not just if you are outside. If you are quote unquote interfering with the government giving aid, so if you're like out protesting, like government action or inaction, you are deemed to be interfering. At which point, like the police and the military are free to open fire on you. So good work, Duterte.
The true color shining through, right? Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, at least in Louisiana, they still have some semblance of democratic government, which is more than they can say in Hungary.
Yes. Viktor Orban, right? Is
yes.
Probably in direct violation of EU directives, among other things. Like, I'm just in charge now, and everything I say is yeah.
Yeah.
That's people, and also in Brazil, right?
Oh yeah,
he is
Bolsonaro.
Bolsonaro is probably the absolute worst in terms of like, oh, it's just like having the flu, and don't worry. It sounds like there's people within his own government that just want him to either shut up and go away, or they want to get him removed from office because it is that bad.
Well,
like, he is that big a clown. I mean, we know that Trump is a clown, in my opinion. If I'm allowed to issue the clown directive. Bolsonaro is like another, almost on another planet of hubris and just being a dick. So,
well, he,
how's that for deep analysis? He's being a dick. Sorry. Well,
I mean,
it's true though.
We're getting to the end of the show. So,
but the power through all the countries of like what's going on.
The thing with Bolsonaro is he did make like a national televised statement either on Tuesday night or Wednesday night where he did call it like the challenge of a generation, which is a huge pivot. But at the same time, earlier this week, he had posts removed from Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for violating their policies about COVID-19 because he was posting pictures of him like being out and about shaking hands and greeting people like the benevolent dictator that he thinks he is.
Well, and that's something that Boris Johnson admitted to as well. He was like, oh, I was in the COVID ward shaking hands. And then 2 weeks later, it's like, oh, I've got COVID-19. Whoops.
Right.
That, they were still pushing herd immunity as a solution up until like not that long ago.
Right.
So UK is on the verge of disaster. Italy's death toll seems to be going down. This, I read that they had the lowest death toll they'd had for a week.
Yeah.
And that the comment was that the drastic measures that they're taking, which is what we're trying to do in Canada as well, obviously, are yielding some kind of result. Spain also on the rise.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like they've hit 100,000 cases. But it also sounds like, going back to Italy, that that whole singing from the balcony thing is sort of winding down. And people are starting to feel the entrenchment, I guess, of this.
Yeah.
And one comment was, no, everything is not all right. I mean, it might be getting marginally better, but they're still not able to stand down. And speaking of cancellation, too, I wanted to mention this summer's Edinburgh Festival, which is massive and just a packed sea of humanity. Edinburgh, Scotland has been canceled for the first time ever. Mm. And I know at least one of my relatives won't be unhappy about that because she's like, it's a zoo, it's a bloody zoo. So, so I hope Cousin Morag's doing well. She might be listening, I don't know, but she will not be unhappy that the Edinburgh Festival is cancelled. Although everybody in Edinburgh who benefits from that, both the Fringe and the regular festival, will be unhappy. So yeah, cancellations are just the rule rather than the exception these days. I think I was wondering locally too, as you know, what if Hillside, I haven't heard anything, which is our big festival.
Yeah, I was just thinking that myself.
And that's not that far off. It's July, right? So.
Well, yeah, and the tickets usually go on sale at the end of this month, beginning of May. Like, that's the big ticket push.
Yeah.
The last thing they posted on their Twitter is, we hope you and yours are doing well under circumstances. We have updates for you regarding COVID-19 impact on our communities. Let's see what that says. This is happening in real time, by the way.
They just tweeted that now? Yeah.
No, this was a couple of days ago. They haven't canceled or postponed the festival yet. They're just sort of individual shows. So the Basia Boulay show at the Royal City Mission on May 1st is postponed. Sarah Harmer's War Mem show on April 4th was postponed. And, of course, the Kazoo Fest was postponed. So, yeah.
So that's funny how we went from like total global to all the shows in Guelph are pretty much canceled.
To ultra local.
The sad statistic that it sounds like before the end of the week, there'll have been a million cases worldwide that we know of.
Oh, yeah.
And have I got it right that we're pushing something to the tune of 50,000 people have been killed by COVID-19?
Yeah,
that is the grim reality of this. So, I mean, we're sort of making light of it in terms of what's canceled and not in our little town. But this is worldwide.
And people should keep in mind that, you know, there's still room to grow, because what they're finding in the Southern Hemisphere is that those cases are now going up because they are going into the fall season in the Southern Hemisphere, which means people are going indoors there. There could be a lot of runway left before we can leave all this behind, I guess, if I'm mixing my metaphors correctly.
Yeah, that's about right. It's like the other one would be, we're not out of the woods yet, but if we all do our part, and the best thing we can do is physical distance, stay out of the way, hands clean, hands away from the face. I think we know all of these things at this point, but not to be taken lightly at all by anyone. Do not underestimate this disease. And and of course, there's some blame being put on the youngins, but try not to congregate, youngins. Use your devices, and like Adam and I are right now, to do this.
Absolutely. And we'll have to leave this show right here. Unfortunately, we are out of time. You can stay connected to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. Find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire and on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. You can listen to the show again by downloading it every Monday at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or on your favorite podcast app at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. I personally am on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, and you can go to GuelphPolitico.ca for more COVID-19 coverage, because that's all the coverage there is. And Scotty, where can people find you on the internets?
People can find me on Twitter at Scotty Hertz and on Facebook also at Scotty Hertz, and haven't been blogging lately. You can check that out, because I might, if I can find a minute, spannerbook.wordpress.com.
And stay tuned for more programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will return remotely next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources Guelph, and we will see you then.